Hi, this is CMDA Matters, your weekly podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp. We have thoroughly enjoyed welcoming spring weather here in Northeast Tennessee, and I hope that wherever you are, you're also getting some longer days and warmer weather. I must admit, though, as I say that, I'm remembering the Zoom meeting that we hosted last week with nearly 100 participants for the annual CMDA House of Representatives gathering. Just before we started our first session for the House, one of the representative members took his laptop and showed us out the window this incredible snowstorm that was happening right there in Nebraska. So times like this, I'm glad I'm in Eastern Tennessee. My wife and I agree that spring is hands down our favorite season of the year. It's a time when we think of new beginnings and new initiatives. And on this issue of CMDA Matters podcast, I'm going to be talking to the co-chairs of the Christian Academic Physicians and Scientists Specialty Section, Dr. Lin Wen and Dr. David Larson. CAPS is a fairly new section for CMDA with more than 100 physicians and scientists signed on already. CAPS was launched just a few months ago with some very important objectives, and my guests today are going to touch on each one of them. Dr. David Larson, after 27 years, retired from his position as professor and chairman of the Department of Plastic Surgery at the Medical College of Wisconsin in 2012. He was also director of the training program for 20 years there and served on the ACGME Residency Review Committee in Plastic Surgery for 6 years. Prior to moving to Milwaukee, he held the position of surgeon and associate professor of surgery at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas, from 1979 to 1986, where he served in the Department of Head and Neck Surgery and was the only plastic surgeon at that institution during that period. Very impressive. He is board certified in both otolaryngology and plastic surgery. Dr. Larson has authored over 140 peer-reviewed articles, book chapters, and books. He has a lifetime commitment to the education of med students, residents, fellows, and peers in the areas of head and neck cancer, wound care, and reconstruction of all areas of the body. You know, since retirement, Dr. Larson has been on over a dozen mission trips to China, Lebanon, Macedonia, and Serbia, all related to education in graduate medical education. He's also chairman of our Medical Education International Advisory Council. He's husband of Sherry for 42 years and father of 3 children, all of whom graduated from my alma mater, Taylor University in Upland, Indiana. Dr. Wen is an assistant professor of medicine, radiology, and biomedical physics at UCLA. As a practicing non-invasive cardiologist, she serves veterans and directs the cardiovascular MRI program at West Los Angeles VA Medical Center. As a physician scientist, the focus of her research is on the development, translation, and application of cardiovascular imaging techniques, specifically MRI and echocardiography. She collaborates with data scientists and industry partners to advance precision medicine. Her funded research focuses on the use of iron oxide nanoparticles in ischemic heart disease. Her work has been published in leading imaging journals, and her lab receives grant support from the American Heart Association, the NIH, and the Veterans Health Administration. Dr. Wen also engages the public through her writing in the general media, including USA Today, Forbes, Medical Economics, and Stat News. She attends Pacific Crossroads Church, has a cat, and enjoys afternoon tea. So let's jump right into my interview with Drs. Wen and Larson. Well, I want to welcome to the program today both Dr. David Larson and Dr. Lin Wen. Dr. Larson is Professor Emeritus at the Department of Plastic Surgery at the Medical College of Wisconsin.
Thank you very much, Mike.
And also, Dr. Wen is working at UCLA. She is assistant professor of medicine, radiology, and biomedical physics at UCLA. And so, welcome to the program, Dr. Lean Wen.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, we're here today because a special section of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations has been resurrected, if you will. And that is what we formerly called the academic section. Now it's being known as the Christian Academic Physicians and Scientists. You are co-chair, Dr. Wen. Can you kind of give us a little bit of background as to the resurrection and the name change?
The section was actually proposed by Dr. Al Weir back in 2008, but then there were some challenges remaining active, and I myself sought out the section in 2018, and fortunately, God introduced me to David Larson through CMDA in 2019. We then had a very productive conversation earlier this year, and that led to the section receiving a new charter and formation of a new executive council, which of course includes Dr. Al Weir. The academic section within CMDA began because there was and is an unmet need for fellowship and mentorship, really, among Christian academics. You mentioned that there was a name change. We just wanted to clarify, but we would like to refer to and view ourselves really as Christian academics, partly because academia is fraught with challenges and, shall we say, temptations. And sometimes the path can be a very lonely one. And while Christian academics or academics overall are frequently expected to lead, but for Christians, there are actually very few resources for us to turn to and few members that we know of to serve as good examples. And so those reasons are partly why I sought out the section and how we began to try and reinvigorate the section.
Dr. Larson, as a co-chair, what would you have to add to what Lean has just shared?
You know, the primary focus of CMDA historically has been on medical students and dental students, of course, and then to the graduates when they become physicians and dentists. That's another section, but the academic piece is something that has really been lacking, and Lean has been the driving force behind this effort. She has really a lot of energy and enthusiasm related to this. And so it's just a pleasure for me to come up alongside of her. As you know, I retired about 7 years ago. And so I bring a little bit of maturity to the age-wise to this conversation. Although I'm still active in education, I was program director for our program at Medical College of Wisconsin. But I'm also have a second encore career. I'm a site visitor for the ACGME. So I do site visits on programs of all 11,000 training programs in the nation. I myself and 35 of my peers do those site visits. So I am still interested in medical education, even in my retirement.
Well, if I can ask Dr. Larson, since you've got the long view, how has academic medicine, from a perspective of a follower of Christ, have things changed a lot recently? I mean, I have a bias that it has, but can you just give us a snapshot of those in academics who are followers of Christ? How has it changed over the last two or three decades?
There's a bias. I think there's no question that there's a bias in academics against Christians, not unlike that in society. It just has a greater impact, I think, on a Christian in academics because it can negatively impact your career and your livelihood, which is a real problem, as you might imagine, much more so than it might be about just the bias against Christianity in society.
These days, there must be a lot of research going on, or proposed research, grant writing for surgery, for example, for transgender transitioning, gender affirmation surgery. And I'm aware of even one of our members, highly placed members, who basically had to step down and leave his institution because of the requirement that he would have to take his plastic surgery department into the future doing gender affirming surgery. So these days, if you were going to do research on that, would you be able to do good science with prospective studies with the idea that maybe it's not going to help or maybe it's not safe? How much oversight from administrative bodies are there on this sensitive topic?
It's interesting that you brought this issue up, Mike. As you may know, I'm a non-invasive cardiologist and also a physician scientist. And so a large part of my livelihood really is to be able to successfully land grants. And so grants are important for our academic promotion from junior to more senior faculty status. And it's something we struggle with quite a bit. As a cardiologist, I'm a little bit more, shall we say, sheltered from that particular topic, but we deal with this on a regular basis because I also take care of patients or veteran patients at the VA. These issues come up partly because the hormone issue that patients have to be treated with, and there are cardiovascular implications of being treated with hormones that we don't quite know. I think that as a physician scientist, it is possible to legitimately design a study to be able to actually look at the outcomes and be funded, but one never knows because there is a study section, and you may already know that grant funding is tough these days, and you Yes. really have to be at the very top. And sometimes even when a grant is well written, it's the luck of the draw and the people who are on the study section making a decision on whether or not you get scored high enough to get funding. So there may be some things around that area, but I am hopeful and I pray that scientists will answer the call and to be able to really design studies that could answer these questions and answer these questions well, and that people would be open-minded to the findings as opposed to being set in their ways, shall we say.
As Lena is speaking, I'm thinking about a communication I just received yesterday, and this is just the practical implication of this topic. And the person who wrote me the communication is a program director for a graduate medical education program, and he signed his name with the name and, of course, the logo of the institution and his address and phone number and contact information. And then down at the bottom, it said pronoun, colon, he/him. And so this is becoming an integral part of our identification. This was just like a phone number. You have to add that pronoun about how you want to be referred to.
Yes, I'm seeing that coming, Dr. Larson, from different directions. As different examples are coming from actually from all over the country in which this is being implemented as a routine and an institution, I assume, enforcing such a thing. Let me switch directions just a little bit. Going back to the CAPS, the Christian Academic Physicians and Scientists, what sort of activities do you envision for the group that you've talked about with Dr. Weir?
I think over the next few years, what we would like to really work on is really developing a network of Christian academics who are committed to teaching, research, and mentorship. We've begun some activities by initiating local fellowship groups based at university medical centers to support faculty. And in our executive council meeting yesterday, actually, we talked about engaging members through a forum for discussion of topics that are relevant to Christian academic faculty, and through hosting a cyber seminar series on faith and work in the lives of Christian academics. And we would propose topics very similar to the one that you just proposed right now.
Yes.
So that Christian academics can really have a discussion on how best to really be able to be light and salt for our community. And this is really the gap that as a junior faculty I've seen in academia. And I think Dr. Larson can elaborate on through the years how he has seen this gap just not being fulfilled.
Another initiative that we spoke of last night, and I think it'll be a reality, is that on our website to establish a bulletin board portal, and on a monthly basis to just put out some questions for those interested in responding about things like first of all, how to deal with the bias against Christianity and academics in a Christ-honoring manner, the impact of artificial intelligence on medicine and the educational mission, and how that impacts Christians, because, of course, artificial intelligence believes in man-focused advancements and origin. Just dealing with some of the bioethical problems, such as assisted physician suicide and cloning, and those that are dealt with through the ethics committee there of CMDA as well, just to get another focus for input.
While I'm not I don't have an academic background, I've been led to believe, and I'd appreciate your comments, that academic respected physicians like yourselves and your specialties, that because of your Christian perspective, that even if you're well-recognized in your field and write a letter to the editor of your journal of your specialty from a Christian perspective, that it's highly unlikely that your letter to the editor is going to get published. What has been your experience in the last 5 years, either one of you, if you have an experience with that?
For me, starting out as a junior faculty member, I've really focused on my science and really have not really written to the editor about controversial subjects. That has always been the advice that's given behind closed doors by other more senior faculty members who are Christians, who talk to us about what to do and what not to do as a Christian in academia. So I have not experienced that directly, because thus far, in terms of publications in scientific journals, I've only addressed the science.
Right.
But I suspect that it's very nuanced in terms of those letters to the editors.
You know, I actually had some personal experience with this. I was part of a Bible study that met weekly in our medical school. There are four or five of us that would get together and study actually classic Christian literature. And this was about 20 years ago, when cloning became much more common. And there's a lot of research in cloning. We were very concerned about this, and the group of us wrote to our dean expressing our concern, and the group of us, some of us were clinicians, but a number of the guys in the study were also scientists, basic scientists who were teachers and worked in the lab and research exclusively. And it fell on deaf ears, as you might imagine. But we felt that we had to do that because it was the right thing to do and to voice our concern over the direction of that kind of research. That being said, I'm not sure that we would do that today as a group of clinicians and scientists.
I've been around enough academics and research-focused physicians in my past that I'm just often shaking my head about what some of these meetings, these IRBs, committees must be like in terms of thinking about being driven by evidence-based medicine, good science, and thinking about either not being able to get funded or being published. What kind of conversations happen around the coffee maker, if you will, in terms of the frustrations of being politically correct these days in an academic setting versus just wanting to get to basic science and the truth? Dr. Nguyen, what do you think about that?
Oh, Mike, I'm not sure where to begin with that question. I think it's a real challenge, and junior faculty members like me have very few good examples, a few good people to go to address those challenges. There are a subset of physicians and scientists who serve on the IRB who do try their best to be evidence-based, but on the other hand, if you think about how science is done, we are all human beings, and we have our own biases. As much as we want to be truly objective about our hypotheses, it's difficult. It is very difficult. Mm-hmm. And so those of us who are Christian academics, we don't have a fellowship within our own community and not necessarily a voice, it is difficult to sometimes be salt and light. We just don't say anything.
Would you guess that most of those listening, Dr. Nguyen or Dr. Larson, in various academic institutions across the United States and maybe even the world, feel pretty much like they're on an island in terms of academic medicine and being a Christian who really is sincere about their faith?
In a sense, we are strangers in a strange land, passing through to where God would have us to be with Him. Regardless, I think to piggyback on what Lean mentioned, this loneliness that some of us, many of us, would feel in an academic setting can be eased to some degree by CAPS. That's the purpose of CAPS.
Yes.
And the Christian Academic Organization that we're talking about, to give them another voice, if you will, or an opportunity to interact with similar-minded peers around the country.
And one of the things that Dr. Weir has shared with me in your discussions is that the hope is that there will be able to be a very secure way that you'll be able to have discussions between those of you who feel isolated in this fellowship, if you will. So how can our members listening out there who are in academics and have been faithfully involved in church and in community and but would like to be linking arms with brothers and sisters in Christ who have just really good minds and have done some really good stuff, or are just getting started for that matter, and would like to get involved in CAPS? How can they do that?
At the council meeting yesterday, we discussed having a portal whereby members of the section are invited. Once they become members, they will have a very secured password-protected account upon which they can access, and that will give them access to a forum where they can discuss with other members of the section confidentially about certain topics or certain issues where it may be uncomfortable to discuss in their own communities, and how they can begin to a discussion and to talk with one another. I think that would be one way in which the community can support one another, and to just propose or give thought or insight to how we can actually just link up and connect with one another and share our challenges and find pathways and outlets for us to actually transform our own academic community through conversations within the section.
So what's the first step?
The first step would be to go to our website. And on our website, we have a variety of information, just a little bio of each of us on the who or on the executive committee of the section, and also the requirements for membership and why join and who should join. And the idea is this is an inclusive effort for Christian academics in all aspects of mentoring and teaching medical students or dental students and those in higher levels of focused research.
You mentioned mentoring. If I could ask, so what plans, especially as someone at your stage and your place with a long track record of maybe linking a very veteran research academic doctor, teaching doctor to a young junior faculty like a Dr. Wen, will you be able to link within the new group CAPS?
That I think that would be the hope, that we would be able to cut to a mentor. And that's really been one of the focuses of myself in my retirement, is to connect with men in particular of, who are medical students, residents, and faculty who are Christ followers, and to speak about those kinds of issues. I know Gloria Halverson, our present president, has identified a mentoring initiative of medical students, or even pre-med students, which is, I think, something that might be a little ambitious for this group at this point, but it is something that might be addressed in the future.
I think mentoring and sponsorship both are needed for Christians. And I can attest organically through working with David Al Weir and the other physicians on the executive council, I've learned a lot from them and really find fellowship in my conversations with them. So we hope that not only will we have a mentoring curriculum per se or program or steps, but also organically through this network that more senior or experienced faculty members who reach out to more junior faculty members and even residents and fellows. And as David mentioned in the beginning, there's a gap because I was a medical student. I was involved in CMDA, but the focus of CMDA has always been on medical students. And then once you get to that residency, fellowship, and junior faculty stage, there really isn't anything for us. And so we hope that through this section that there will be a directed program for mentoring, as well as an informal or a formal and an informal way of mentoring and sponsoring other Christian academics.
One of the things that I just want to reemphasize, one of the things that Lynn just mentioned is that gap between being a medical student and being a resident and our fellow in the future, and then going into academics. This is also a group, CAPS would include those residents and fellows who have issues as they get their education in an academic environment.
Well, Dr. Larson and Dr. Nguyen, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be a part of our program today. I pray that this idea that the resurgence of Christians in academics and science, we will see this section grow and that God will bless your efforts and his kingdom will be advanced in a place that's not easy to work in, but very vital for the future of medical science. So God bless you both as you endeavor as co-chairs together of CAPS to glorify God and motivate, educate, and equip Christian healthcare professionals within academics.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.
You know, when I talked to Dr. Nguyen and Dr. Larson, it made me think of that gifted young leader in the Old Testament who himself must have felt like he was on a relational and professional island. I'm talking about Daniel. He was in a very secular place called Babylon, the center of knowledge and academic pursuits in the world at that time. And as Dr. Larson put it, he was an alien and stranger passing through, if you will. You could almost say Daniel was an academic guy, because he posed a hypothesis to the guard responsible for him that he and the three other young Hebrew men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, should have a trial of a kosher diet while the control group of gifted Hebrew young men took a hefty, high-protein meat meal from the king's table. And you know the result of that controlled trial, don't you? The four Hebrew boys were in much better shape and stood out with much better overall outcomes. Well, I'm not sure the p-value is less than 0.05, but Ashpenaz, the king's chief official, noted that there was an observable difference. It also reminds me of that old Sunday school song that I used to sing, "Dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone, dare to have a purpose strong, and dare to make it known." And I think that's at the heart of the motivation for Dr. Larson and Dr. Nguyen and the rest of their executive team that have launched CAPS. If you'd like to find out more about CAPS and register for one of those monthly webinars that CAPS is sponsoring, just go to their website, and that's CAPS, CAPS.cmda.org. You can just scroll down their homepage and see the schedule for these webinars. And the first one is Wednesday, May 6th, and features Pastor Greg Ogden, who will be sharing on a rational approach to making reproducing disciples of Jesus. These webinars are free if you're a member of CMDA, and if you're not a member, they're just $10 after you sign on and get your own account on CMDA. And that $10 is charged just to help cover the cost of bringing in these special speakers. I would encourage you to share with physicians and scientists within your own personal network, not only about these webinars, but also about the CAPS section, this fellowshipping network of Christian academic physicians and scientists, and encourage them to get on board. Now, if you're interested in getting involved in one of the other 11 specialty sections under the CMDA umbrella, just go to cmda.org/specialty-sections, specialty-sections, and find out how to get connected with your peers, if indeed we have a specialty section in your particular area. Well, many of our colleagues are serving on the front lines of the pandemic in their communities, hard hit by the virus. Others are leaving their relatively safer communities to volunteer to come alongside these healthcare warriors in hot spots around the country. Just this morning, I heard from one of our global health outreach volunteers from the past who wrote to our GHO team and said, "Thank you for connecting me to this effort in New York City, Central Park with Samaritan's Purse. God is using me in this multi-ethnic place called New York City to bring glory to Him." Well, you can go to SamaritansPurse.org and see there about how you might sign up to become a volunteer, a servant, and as a healthcare professional there in New York City or other places in which they're serving. And please be sure to put CMDA member with your name so that they can identify like-minded servants of Christ. If you're interested in volunteering through government avenues like FEMA, the Medical Reserve Corps, and other avenues, just go visit our webpage at freedomnumeral2care.org, freedomnumeral2care.org. At the top of the page on the resource tab, you can just click on coronavirus groups. And please remember to pray for our brothers and sisters on the front lines of this pandemic. I want to leave you with scripture from Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 and 7. Brothers and sisters, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all human understanding, it will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Well, that's all for this week. Please know that what matters to you matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. Lord willing, we'll see you next week. Bye for now.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.